And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man, Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
Well, it's about, 7 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
What's up, Carl? Here we are in the seventh floor studio.
Yeah, so we're live in the seventh floor studio.
Trying to get used to our new surroundings. They are decorating the showcase studio for the holidays.
Yes, they are. And in the booth, the one and only Elif Garis. She was born in Turkey, but she's no turkey when it comes to producing this show.
Yeah, I heard that last week.
There we
Hi,
go.
Hi, how are you?
Is that you like that? I even had the rim shot going on.
Yeah.
Not bad, right?
Yeah, we're all laughing.
This
over
is
here.
Program 129, Elif, in the series. Did you know that?
I did know that.
129 episodes Lisa's put up with me. This is November 12th, and we have 3 full hours of classic radio for you. We're going to start things off with Dragnet from 1954, then The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective with Howard Duff, and The New Adventures of Lisa's Grand Uncle, Nero Wolf. We have detectives on the air tonight and also tomorrow night. We have 6 detectives coming your way. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars as an ageless sorcerer in the upcoming horror film The Dark Tower, based on the series of novels by Stephen King. And if you get this answer correct, you will win the Lightkeeper Pro.
Yeah, Lightkeeper Pro.
Right.
I could go for one of those.
A coveted Christmas tool that we everybody wants that Lightkeeper Pro.
They do. All
Help
right.
Prepare
so
holiday gifts. Holiday light sets.
Here's the number to call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor starred in Dazed and Confused.
That's what I love about these high school girls, man. I get older, they stay the same age.
Yes, they do, Lisa. 312-981-7200. Give us a call if you know who that actor is. Win a Lightkeeper Pro. We'll be right back.
We are back, and clearly I have put up with Carl Amari for 129 shows of the WGN Radio Theater. Thank you. Let's play that Celebrity Scoop movie clip one more time.
That's what I love about these high school girls, man. I get older, they stay the same age.
Yes, they do.
All right. Let's talk to Polly from Justice. Hey, Polly. Where's Polly?
Oh, wait a second.
Phone. We're trying to get used to the studio
Polly?
Up here. Hey, Polly. No,
we're trying
where's
to
Polly?
Find Polly?
I'm so sorry. This is so difficult.
We're going to get him on.
Oh, we've got Dan Long. Come on, Dan. We need Polly.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, there you are. How are you?
All right.
Good.
We're glad you called in, and I'm guessing you know the answer to that question.
Yes. It was Matthew McConaughey.
Matthew McConaughey is right, and we are thrilled to give you the Lightkeeper Pro. It is the best holiday gift of the season, and we're so happy to give one to you tonight.
Other than a Ferrari.
Yeah, if you don't win a Ferrari, it's the Lightkeeper Pro.
Right.
Well, that's cool, though. Every little bit helps. And with decorating season coming up, I'm probably going to need one.
Yeah, we all do.
A Ferrari would slip and slide in the snow anyway, so you're better with a Lightkeeper Pro.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Polly. We hope you listen to the show tonight.
Thank you, Polly.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right, Lisa, it's time for our first detective adventure. It's Dragnet. This was a police procedural, came to radio in 1949, lasted all the way, Lisa, to 1957, 9 seasons on the radio was True Crime Stories of Closed Cases, and Jack Webb was really the whole shooting match behind this program. He played L.A. Police Detective Sergeant Joe Friday. Each case was detailed from start to finish, and Friday narrated the action. And this had all kinds of sound effects. So Jack Webb liked sound effects, as you'll hear on these shows, tons of them. There were five sound effects experts on every episode of this and knocking out all the different sound effects. And it went to radio, it was on radio, went to television. There was movies, and it was 16 seasons on television. So this is a very popular detective adventure. And we have an episode for you now called The Big Bill. It stars Jack Webb from January 19th, 1954. Here's part one of Dragnet.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to homicide detail. An elderly woman in your city has disappeared. There's no lead to where she's gone or why she left. Your job? Find her. Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, July 14th. It was hot in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of homicide detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Lorman. My name's Friday. We were on our way out from the office, and it was 9:47 a.m. when we got to 654 Kenmore Avenue.
Yes?
Miss Crocker?
It's Miss Crocker, but I'm her.
Police officers.
Oh, yeah, come in.
Thank you. It's my partner, Frank Smith. My name's Friday.
Oh, how
you doing, ma'am?
Just sit down there on the couch. Move that afghan. I was laying down when you got here. It's a terrible thing. I just know it.
Yes, ma'am. If you tell us about it, please.
You just bet I will. First off, can I get you something? Maybe a cup of coffee, a little piece of cinnamon toast?
No, thank you, ma'am.
Okay. You change your mind, you just let me know.
Yes, we will. Now, if you just tell us about Ms. Gillespie, please.
I hope if anything ever happens to me, I get this kind of service.
Yes, ma'am. Are you a friend of Mrs. Gillespie?
Her best. That's why I know something's happened to her.
Uh-huh.
She wouldn't just take off like this without telling me. Matter of fact, she didn't tell nobody. Just all of a sudden, she was gone.
All right, if you'd start right at the beginning and just tell us the whole story, please.
Well, Bertha Gillespie and me been friends for years.
I see.
Her and me been friends for years, ever since her husband died and she opened up the Tea Cozy. That's the little tea shop she has.
Yeah.
Nice place. She's done real good with it. All the ladies in the neighborhood go down there for afternoon tea. Serves those little tiny cake rolls with a pot of tea. Ladies' fingers, you know.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, a couple of days ago, I went down there to see Bertha.
You know what day that was?
Hmm?
I say, do you know the exact date?
Oh, now, let's see. This is Wednesday. I guess it must have been Saturday. Yes, that's it, Saturday.
All right, would you like to go ahead, please?
Well, I went down to the Tea Cozy, and there was a sign right on the door telling how Bertha was sick and she'd gone away for a couple of days.
Was she in poor health?
Bertha?
Yes, ma'am.
Bertha was as strong as an ox. Nothing wrong with her. Besides that, I saw her only Friday night. She didn't say nothing to me about being sick. Not a word.
I see.
That's what made me figure that there was something wrong. For the past 10 years, if there was anything on Bertha's mind, she told me about it. You just bet she did.
Well, isn't it possible that she just used the pretended illness as an excuse? That she just went away on a trip, maybe?
Oh, Bertha wouldn't do that.
Why do you say that?
Well, because she just wouldn't do it. Not with Saturday coming up. There isn't anything in the world that could make Bertha leave.
Well, what's happening Saturday?
Scrabble.
Beg pardon?
Scrabble. You know, the word game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, the ladies in the neighborhood have a sort of club. We meet down at the Cozy and play our tournaments. Bertha's the champion. Hasn't been anybody that can beat her real good. You know, not regular.
Yes, ma'am.
That's why she wouldn't leave. This Saturday was her first big match outside the club. A woman from West Los Angeles was coming out here to challenge her. Bertha's been in training all week. Well, she wouldn't just walk out on the match. I'm telling you, officers, there's something wrong.
Well, has Mrs. Gillespie any relatives here in Los Angeles?
No. No, she's got some people back east, Mississippi, I think.
Possible that she might have left to go see them?
I told you. Not with the big match coming on. Ain't nothing in the world that could keep Bertha from playing in that. Nothing, and you believe it.
Yes, ma'am. Does she have any men friends?
Well, you mean romantic?
Yes.
Well, there's Chester, but that's not what I'd call a real romance. Bertha'd go out to the movies with him once in a while. Maybe he'd come over to the tea cozy of an evening, and they'd sit there and watch the television. But there'd always be somebody else there, mostly me. No, no, you couldn't say that it was any kind of a romance with Chester.
Do you have his address?
Are you going to talk to him?
Yes, we'll have
it. It won't do you any good. I already did. He don't know where Bertha is.
If you'll just give us the phone number of this Chester, we'll check on your friend.
Yeah, you check. You'll find out what I said is true.
Yes, ma'am.
I think somebody done Bertha in. She wouldn't just take off like this without telling me.
Well, now, ma'am, did she have any enemies in the neighborhood? Anybody that you think might want to do her harm?
No, not a soul, not a single one. Isn't anyone who didn't like her. Well, maybe Mrs. Ruman didn't care much for her, but I think that was a kind of a jealous thing.
Well, what do you mean?
Scrabble.
What was that?
Mrs. Ruman, Helen. She thought she could play the game. Then when she challenged Bertha to a match, well, it was pretty terrible. 457 to 214. Helen was pretty upset. She tried to make out like she was a good loser, you know, kind of smiled and laughed. But I could tell. She didn't like being skunked.
Yes, ma'am. Can you think of any reason why anyone would want to harm Miss Gillespie?
Well, not right off, unless it was for money.
What?
Last time I saw her, she was carrying a lot of cash money around with her.
Yeah.
$2,500.
10:33 a.m. We put in a call to missing persons detail and checked the name Bertha Gillespie through the files. There'd been no report filed on her, and her name did not appear in the Gaga file. We checked the name through R&I, but she had no criminal record in Los Angeles. 10:47 a.m. We drove by the Tea Cozy restaurant. On the front door, attached with cellophane tape, was a hand-lettered note reading, "Taking a short vacation. Watch for reopening." Through the glass pane, we could see the interior of the shop. Everything appeared to be in order. Frank and I checked the rear of the building, but from what we could see, there was nothing out of line. 11:28 a.m., we put in a call to the missing woman's boyfriend, Chester Avon. He told us that he'd talked to the Gillespie woman on the previous Friday night, and she'd appeared in good spirits and had said nothing about leaving. We checked at her bank. We found that she'd made a withdrawal from her savings account to the amount of $2,500. This left a balance of over $12,000 in the savings account, $6,000 in the checking account. The manager of the branch told us that he'd spoken with Mrs. Gillespie when she'd taken the money and that she told him that she was thinking of taking a short vacation. We got in touch with Miss Crocker and told her what we'd found. We asked her if she wanted to file a missing persons report. She said that she'd wait until the end of the week, and if her friend hadn't returned by then, that she'd come into the office. A month passed before we heard from her again. On the morning of Friday, August 20th, she called to tell us that she still hadn't heard from Mrs. Gillespie and asked that we conduct a formal investigation. She came down to the office and filled out a Form 316. Frank and I drove out to the restaurant to check it again. It was exactly as it had been when we'd last seen it. We tried the doors and found that they were still locked. 1:43 p.m., we went back to the office.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of high, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, did your people check into it?
I see.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Mr. Jones. If you find out anything, we'd appreciate it if you'd give us a call. Right. That's Michigan 5211, extension 2521. Yes, sir. Either Officer Frank Smith or Sergeant Joe Friday. That's right. Thanks for your help. Yes, indeed. Thank you. Goodbye.
Well, that finishes up the utility calls.
And what do you got?
Telephone bill for the past 30 days is just the service charge, no toll calls. Same with the electric lights.
Uh-huh. They received payment in the last month, did they?
No. Telephone company says they haven't been paid in over 60 days. Says they've sent a couple of reminders.
Uh-huh.
Only reason they haven't cut off the service is the bills have always been paid promptly in the past.
I see.
I checked with our business office. Girl tells me the bill usually runs around $10.
Possible, then, that the phone hasn't been used at all, huh?
Well, it shapes up that way. Same with the lights. The one thing doesn't match.
Yeah, what's that?
The water bill. I checked with them. Normal bill's about $4 for the place.
Yeah.
Last 60 days, it's been $79.
It's a lot of water, isn't it?
Yeah. I talked to one of the engineers at the company, a fellow named Jones.
Yeah, what'd he tell you?
Well, he told me there was only one thing that could cause a water jump like that.
Yeah.
A water tap.
Yeah.
Running for about a month.
Two oh six p.m. We called the bank where Mrs. Gillespie had her accounts.
The head cashier told us that since the date she'd withdrawn the $2,500, there'd been no deposits or withdrawals made. We telephoned the missing woman's friend, Mrs. Winifred Crocker. From her, we got the name and address of the owner of the building where the Tea Cozy restaurant was located. Frank and I signed out of the office and drove out to see him. The address we'd been given was a large house in the Silver Lake District. We rang the bell to the front door, but we got no answer. We walked around to the back of the property to a large garage.
Now, Joe, if we find this guy, we can find out if she gave him some indication she was going to leave.
Yeah. Sounds like there's somebody there.
Yeah.
In here, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Oh, there's the knocking on the door. Mike likes knocking. He likes to break into knocking instead of music.
A knocking, a door slam.
Yeah.
He's into the door thing.
I'm not sure why he broke into knocking when there was music just like 10 seconds before that knocking.
Yeah, I couldn't answer that for you.
I don't know. But we'll have to have a word with Mike.
You're a tough boss.
It's 11:25 here on a Saturday night, Lisa. We have detectives on the air. This is Dragnet. We're tuning into Dragnet from January 19th, 1954. It's called The Big Bill, and it stars Jack Webb. I have a very special announcement for all of our listeners. It's very, very special because I think our listeners are going to love this. I put up a new website last week, and I think our listeners are just going to love it because it's a website at freeradioclassics.com. That's the URL. Just go to www.freeradioclassics.com. And as a thank you for listening to this show, you can receive a free classic radio show every week, 52 weeks a year, every year. You simply log on to freeradioclassics.com, enter your first and last name and your email address, and that's all you have to do. Every Monday, I will send you an email that contains a link to listen to and collect a free old-time radio show via digital download. Now, one week it may be Gunsmoke, the next week it's Jack Benny, the next week it's Suspense, and so on. Now, every old-time radio show that I send you is digitally remastered for superb sound quality and will include detailed historical information, a synopsis, cast members, and a photo of the star. This is a free service to you, our listeners, as a thank you for being a listener to this show, and you can unsubscribe anytime you like. If you enjoy listening to and collecting old-time radio shows in superb sound quality, just sign up to freeradioclassics.com. Subscribe today. You'll receive your first email from me this coming Monday and every Monday containing your free old-time radio show. Not bad, right, Lisa?
Well, who wouldn't want an email from Carl Amari?
You know, well, there's. I can think of some people that might not want an email from
too,
me.
Yeah, I can too, actually, yeah.
Yeah. The ones that have restraining orders against me.
Yeah, and some others.
Those people don't want any kind of contact with me at all. But last week I mentioned this on the air, and there was a technical glitch, but we fixed it. It's all fixed. It's working
beautifully.
Perfectly. It's working flawlessly, as they say. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll... Oh, yeah, this is it right here. This changed my life, this music. Oh, yeah.
I hope everybody can see us on the seventh floor because Carl's doing his disco moves.
I'll tell you what, man. This movie changed my life. I am the nerd I am today because of this movie. Saturday Night Fever, John Travolta. I had the whole outfit. I had the white suit, the brown silk shirt underneath, the platform shoes.
And the Italian horn.
Italian horn, yeah. Yep. Told you the story about the Italian horn.
Yes,
right?
You have, just a few times.
Saved up all my money, Elif, to get this Italian horn. And then there was this girl, I liked her, and she wanted my, she says, I'd like to wear your Italian horn. That'll be mean you and I will be going steady. Gave her the Italian horn, never got a kiss, nothing. And that was it. Never saw the horn, never saw the girl again.
Nothing's changed.
She's out there somewhere with my horn. Yeah.
With your horn.
She's got my horn. So,
So how has things turned around for you since then?
Don't give jewelry out to women that
that
don't kiss me first.
Is that right?
You have to kiss me first, then they'll get jewelry.
I gotcha.
All right, so you have a live read?
Yes. Did you know that your child's teeth contain precious stem cells. Did you also know that those same stem cells can be safely recovered and stored for use in stem cell therapies and treatments throughout their life? At BioEden, they specialize in banking your child's stem cells so they can be available whenever and wherever they need them. So maybe there is a real tooth fairy after all. Call BioEden today at 888-315-3843. That's 888-315-3843. Visit their website at bioeden.com. Ask for your $1 trial.
That was the lovely Lisa Wolf with a smile in her voice right
I'm
there.
I'm still smiling.
For BioEden.
BioEden.
We're tuning in to Dragnet. We have the conclusion coming your way. Then a little later, it's The Adventures of Sam Spade, detective starring Howard Duff. Then Sidney Greenstreet stars as Nero Wolf. He was a gargantuan gourmet, never left his brownstone in New York. He had his manservant, Archie Goodwin, go out and solve the crimes for him.
I need a manservant.
Yeah, and then tomorrow night when we come back here, we have three more detective adventures. We're going to tune into Candy Mattson. She was a female detective. And then we have Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, and then Boston Blackie. And you know Boston Blackie is my favorite, Lisa.
You know, people have been asking for Boston Blackie, and people have been asking for detectives. So
yeah.
This is your weekend. I did this for you.
It's all about the detective adventures this weekend. All right, we're tuning in to The Big Bill, starring Jack Webb. Here's the conclusion to Dragnet.
Yeah, we'd like to see Virgil Medina.
I'm him. What do you want?
Police officers. We'd like to check out a few things with you if we can.
What about?
Well, it might be easier if we talked inside.
I got no truck with the cops. I got none that I want. Now you can just ask your questions from out there.
All right, sir. That's the way you want it.
Well, that's the way it's going to be. Now get your questions asked and go about your business.
You own a building located at 687 Kenmore Avenue?
Why?
Look, Mr. Medina, we're trying to conduct an investigation. We'd like to have your cooperation. If you don't want to talk here, we can go downtown.
I own the building. Why?
You have a tenant named Bertha Gillespie?
Yes. Why?
When'd you see her last?
Well, about a month ago, at least that.
Do you remember the exact date?
I don't know. It's a long time ago. What's all this about Bertha anyway? What are all these questions? You got something you want to know about her? Go ask her yourself. Anything I can tell you that she can't, go talk to her. Leave me alone.
Where'd you see her last?
Down at the restaurant.
What time of day?
Night, nighttime.
Would you try to remember what date it was? It's pretty important.
Wait a minute. I'll try to figure. See, I guess it must have been on a Saturday night. Yes, I'd say it was Saturday, the 10th of July.
Do you have any way of being sure that that's the date?
Now, look, you come around here asking questions, and I've given you an answer. You can take it or leave it. I got no way of being sure. That's the day I think I saw her last.
She seemed in good spirits?
What do you mean by that?
Well, sir, was she happy, or was there something worrying her?
Well, she seemed happy to me. I didn't pay a lot of attention. What are you cops trying to find out? You come right out and tell me what you want, and maybe I'll have the answer. But I haven't got time to stand around and waste time with you. Now, you tell me why you're asking these questions, or you can leave.
Mrs. Gillespie's been reported missing. We're trying to trace it.
Well, who done that? Who says she's missing?
Well, that's not the important point here. We got the report. We've got to check it out.
Well, whoever told you that's crazy? If Bertha's gone, there's a good reason for it. I guess she just finally got fed up and left town.
What do you mean?
She made a mint of money from that place. Regular mint. Used to tell me that when she had enough, she was going to just take off and see the world. Go around the whole world on a tramp steamer. She told me when she signed the last lease that she thought this would be the last one. She ain't missing. She just gone.
Did she say anything to you about the fixtures in the place?
What do you mean?
Well, you know, the furniture, all the fixtures. They belong to her, don't they?
Yes, I guess so.
Would she make any arrangements to dispose of them?
Not me, she didn't.
I wonder if you have a key to the place.
The tea cozy?
Yes, sir.
No, I don't.
You own the building and you don't have a key to the restaurant?
Well, no, I had one, but I lost it. Never had another one made. Why? What do you want with the key?
We want to check the premises.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, you got no right to do that. Place belongs to Mrs. Gillespie. You got no right to go tromping around in there.
Afraid we're going to have to.
Then you're going to do it without my say-so.
All right, sir, if that's the way it's going to be.
I'm telling you, she ain't going to like it. She ain't going to like you going in the place when she isn't there.
Well, we'll take that up with her.
Well, you better, because I'm not going to take any responsibility for it.
We're not asking you to, Mr. Medina.
I'll give you this, though.
Yes, sir, what's that?
You go nosing around, you're liable to come up with something that you ain't looking for.
Yeah, well, thanks for your help, Mr. Medina.
No mention it. Just remember what I told you about finding trouble when you ain't looking for it.
Well, that doesn't happen often.
Huh?
We're looking for it. 3:14 p.m. Frank and I drove back to the Tea Cozy restaurant on Kenmore Avenue. We checked the front door of the place. It was locked. While Frank covered one side of the building, I took the other side, looking for open windows.
How about it?
No luck.
Me neither. What do we do now?
Well, we'll have to try to force one of the windows in the back.
All right.
Come on. I think maybe we can get in here.
You gonna break it?
Well, we're gonna have to.
Wait a minute, Joe.
Huh?
You hear water running? Sounds like it's coming from inside.
Yeah, might be. Well, let's get in there.
You want my gun?
No, I'll use the handcuffs. See if I can knock a hole in the top half of the window here.
Wait a minute. You better use your handkerchief.
Let me borrow yours.
Here.
All right. All right, look out. There, that does it. I'll go on in and open the door.
Yeah, I'll meet you out in front.
All right.
Frank? Yeah, here.
Come on in.
See anything?
No, I haven't looked yet.
Well, this must be the living room.
Yeah.
Everything looks okay here. A little dusty.
Yeah. Water's running someplace. Wait a minute. Yeah. Sounds like it's come from over there. Yeah. Better turn it off.
Yeah. Better call a crime lab, huh?
Yeah. Kind of a rough one, isn't it?
Yeah. Looks like she put up quite a fight. Bloodstains all over the place.
Yeah, look here.
Huh?
I guess this is what killed her.
Yeah.
Butcher knife. From a picture and the description that we'd gotten from Winifred Crocker, we identified the victim as the missing woman, Bertha Gillespie. We put in a call for the crime lab. Lee Jones and his crew came out and went over the place. The rest of the restaurant seemed to be in order. There was no sign of a struggle of any kind except in the bathroom where the body had been found. The murder weapon, the butcher knife, was dusted for prints, as was the rest of the restaurant, but the partials that the crime lab came up with were worthless for classification. They would be sufficient, however, for comparison if we caught the killer. A search of the personal effects of the dead woman revealed no further information to aid us in apprehending her killer. The $2,500 that she was known to have had when she was last seen was missing. 6:21, the men from the crime lab finished their investigation on the scene, and the coroner's office was called. They came out and removed the body. They also locked the door and affixed the coroner's seal. 6:45 p.m., Frank and I got back to our car to go down to the office. All right, let's go, Frank.
Yeah.
Hey, wait a minute.
Hold it, Frank.
Huh? That's a little kid.
You guys the cops?
Yeah, son, what's the matter?
A lot of excitement around here, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Something we can do for you?
No, I figured maybe there's something I can do for you.
What do you mean?
You know who did the murder yet?
Why do you say it was a murder, son?
I know who did it.
You are listening to Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action.
Working detective has learned by experience that approximately 60% of all homicides are solved within 20 minutes after the arrival of the authorities. Two things are necessary in establishing the identity of a killer: motive and opportunity. In the present instance, we had the motive. $2,500 that the dead woman had withdrawn from her account was missing. However, a month had passed between the time the actual murder had taken place and it had been discovered. Ample time for the killer to cover his tracks. Now, before we could leave the scene, we had a witness who stated that he could name the killer for us. We asked the boy to get into the back seat of the police car while Frank and I questioned him.
What's your name, son?
Gordon Eric. Kids always call me Gordy.
Uh-huh. How old are you?
7.
Now, what's all this about you being able to tell us who killed Mrs. Gillespie?
I can.
Well, who was it?
Mr. Medina.
You mean the man who owns the building?
Yeah, that's who I mean.
Well, that's a pretty serious charge, Gordon. Do you have any way to prove that?
I guess I really can't prove it, but I know it's true.
Well, how do you know?
I just know, that's all. I seen him there. I just seen him going in and out.
Well, when was this?
3 weeks ago. Maybe a month. But he used to go in and out all the time. Argue with Mrs. Gillespie.
What do you mean by argument?
Loud. Mr. Medina screamed at Mrs. Gillespie.
Will you ever hear any of these arguments, son?
Sure. My mother's a friend of Mr. Gillespie. We just live a couple blocks away on Dewey Street. I play over here all the time. I've heard Mr. Medina yell at her.
What'd they argue about, son?
Mostly about lease or something. Seems like Mr. Medina wants Mrs. Gillespie to move out. She didn't want him. Made him pretty sore. You gotta talk to him. He'll tell you the same thing about how he used to fight with her.
All right, son. Your mother ever hear any of these fights?
Sure. You ask her. She'll tell you the same way just as I did.
Okay, is she home now?
Should be. Maybe she went out to the store or something. She should be home.
Okay, son. Let's go, Frank.
Yeah.
Guess this is about the most excitement we've had for a long time.
Yeah.
Poor old Mrs. Gillespie. She's a nice old lady. Real nice.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't hardly anybody that didn't like her. Hardly anybody.
How about Mr. Medina? 7.04 p.m., we drove young Gordon Eric to his home and talked with his mother. She verified his story about the arguments between the victim and Medina. She went on to say that Medina had threatened Mrs. Gillespie, saying that if she wouldn't vacate the premises, he'd take care of her. We had their statements taken, and at 8.40 p.m., we went by Medina's house and asked him to accompany us downtown. He finally agreed, although he was sullen and uncooperative. When we got him down to the office, we checked his name through the record bureau, but we found that he had no criminal record in Los Angeles. His prints were rolled and sent to Harlan Stahl for comparison with those found on the murder weapon. While we waited for the results, we talked to him in the squad room.
You're going to regret this, you know that.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, you drag me down here with all these questions. You just wait till my lawyers get here. He'll put a stop to all this foolishness.
You want to tell us what it's all about, Medina?
Tell you about what? How one of my tenants got herself killed? Now listen, I got property all over town, a lot of tenants. I worried about each one of them, I wouldn't have no time to do nothing else.
We understand you had some pretty big arguments with Mrs. Gillespie.
Who said that? Who told you that?
Is it true?
Why, it's a lie. You bring the person in here who said it, and I'll tell them it's a lie right in their face. You just bring them in here.
We can't do that, and you know it.
Yeah, of course you can. You know why? You want me to tell you?
Go ahead, you tell us.
You can't show the person who said that because there ain't no such person. Anybody in the world who says, I argue with Bertha.
Uh-huh. You try to get her to break her lease with you?
That's none of your business. I told you before, I'm not about to answer a lot of questions that aren't none of your concern. A
couple of things we better set you straight on, mister. You're a suspect in a murder. Now, if you're smart, you're going to realize that and give us some straight answers.
You just wait till my lawyer gets here. He'll take care of all this, and he's going to fix you for taking my fingerprints. I still don't think you had any right to do that. No right at all.
Oh, yeah. Homicide Friday. Yeah, Harlan. How many? All right. Thank you. You want to tell us why you killed her, Medina?
What are you talking about?
That was our fingerprint man. They checked your prints against the ones we found on the murder knife. They matched perfectly.
Hmm. You're sure, are they?
They're sure.
I didn't mean to do it. I really didn't mean to, honestly. Just all of a sudden, I got so mad. I was standing there smiling. You should have known that. She had a way of smiling at you, and you knew that there wasn't anything that you could do. You just stand there smiling. I didn't mean to kill her, though. You got to believe that I didn't mean to kill her.
Want to tell us how it happened?
Have you got a cigarette?
Yeah. There you go.
Thanks.
There's a match.
I had a chance to lease the place to some other people. More money. I tried to get her out.
Go ahead.
I tried to talk to her. I tried to get her to retire. She had enough money. She didn't ever have to worry. All I wanted her to do was to get out. But she wouldn't. She said I'd signed the lease with her and she was going to keep it.
How much difference was there between what she was paying and what the new people were going to give you?
$50 a month.
You killed her for that?
Oh, yeah, you don't understand. You gotta try. Not really. This is important. If you knew Bertha, you'd know why I did it. You see, I went to her. I told her that I'd give her a lease on another piece of property. I'd give it to her at less money. I was trying to be fair. You can see that. I wanted to be fair.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that Saturday night, I decided to have it out with her. I went over to talk, tried to convince her. But she wouldn't listen. She just wouldn't listen. I tried everything to make her listen, but she wouldn't. She just stood there and told me that she had the lease and that she was going to keep it. She just stood there with that superior smile of hers, like she knew it all. Makes you want to hit her as hard as you could. If you knew her, you'd see what I mean. You'd see.
Did you take the money?
Yes. I don't know why I did that. Just all of a sudden, I got so mad at her, I picked up the knife. And I killed her. I didn't mean to, honest, I didn't. As soon as I saw her, I was sorry. I was real sorry.
Yeah. Did you turn that water on?
Well, I guess so. You see, I don't remember too good. I I washed my hands after I'd killed her. I remember that. I guess I did leave the water on. I guess I did, yes.
All right. Do you want to get the stenographer, Frank?
Sure.
Thanks.
You've seen the way she thought she was so much better than anybody else, you'd know.
Is that right?
Sure. All those old hens clucking around all the time, building her up, making her feel superior, real superior.
Mm-hmm.
If she just moved out, if she just let me have the place, it all would have been all right. If she just done that. That's a lot of money, you know. $50 a month. That's what I stood to make on the deal.
Yeah.
It was worth it, don't you think? $50 a month without turning a hand? Everybody'd figured that way, wouldn't they? Well, everybody'd think so.
Now, when you get where you're going, you're going to ask them.
The story you have just heard is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent. On November 10th, trial was held in Department 97, Superior Court of the State of California, in and for the County of Los Angeles. Virgil Emil Medina was tried and convicted of murder in the second degree and received sentence as prescribed by law. Murder in the second degree is punishable by imprisonment in the state penitentiary for a period of from 5 years to life. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors, Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Marty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Brasher. Heard tonight were Ben Alexander, Vic Rodman, Billy Chapin. Script by John Robinson. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking.
Watch an entirely different Dragnet case history each week on your local NBC television station. Please check your newspapers for the day and time. Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles. Hear John Cameron Swayze and the news next on the NBC Radio Network.
All right, that's Dragnet, going back to January 19th, 1954, with the Big Bill starring Jack Webb, along with Ben Alexander, as heard on NBC. Hope you enjoyed Dragnet. And we've had a bunch of people calling and texting and asking what the name of the website was that I talked about a little earlier, where you can just go to the website, put your first and last name and your email address, and I'll send you an email every Monday with a digitally remastered classic radio show along with a picture of the star, history, all kinds of fun stuff. You'll get a digitally remastered, beautiful-sounding classic radio show sent to you that you can digitally download, collect, listen to every single Monday. That website is freeradioclassics.com, freeradioclassics.com. Let's take a break, then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Well, about 7 minutes after midnight, thank you, David Jennings. This is the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. Elif Garris is here as well. And we have detective shows for you, detective adventures for you. We also have a very lovely young lady shadowing us, checking out the studio. Her name is Vivian, and I'm not going to even attempt to say her her last name, but what's your last name? Talking to the microphone there.
Hello.
Hang on a second. I want to say, what is it?
Vujuklaiki.
I'm going to try this again. Say it again.
Vujuklaiki.
Vuvulaiki.
Vujuklaiki.
Kind of close.
There. Vujuklaiki.
Yes.
Vujuklaiki.
And she's lived all over the world. She's from Greece. She went to London and studied communications. She was, where else were you, did you say? You were in Mexico?
No.
He's not a good listener.
Yes.
I just traveled quite a bit. But.
Traveled. Well, she is a very lovely young lady, and she is shadowing all us here. You know, like the shadow?
The Shadow.
Lamont Cranston.
You are the Shadow, Vivian.
Yeah, very cool. Well, it's nice to have you here.
Lovely to be here. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Lisa Wolf in this hour. It's The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective. You like that?
I like
Howard
it.
Duff.
I was going to mention on
what?
The side here
yes?
that we've got some viewers who are mentioning we still have the live feed up, and it looks very cold in the studio because I see you're wearing your famous red sweatshirt jacket that you wear pretty much
I like
much
to be
every,
warm.
And I know I have my little Patagonia. A furry sweater on, so I guess we're.
It's not that cold.
It's not that cold, though.
It's not too bad in here.
I think it's Carl's giving off a chill.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
There's a chill in the air.
There is. And then in our next hour, your uncle will be here with Nero Wolf, although
yes.
there's an E at the end.
I know, but, you know, that is my claim to fame, my Uncle Nero.
Yeah.
So we were very close
yes.
once upon a time.
Well, we have an episode with Sydney Greenstreet. So good detective adventures. And this is all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming crime comedy Going in Style about three retirees who plan a bank heist. And if you are the winner, you get a Christmas package, including a Lightkeeper Pro.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. You'll hear this actor speaking in the film Unforgiven.
Of course, you know, Will, Claudia was alive, you wouldn't be doing this.
All right. Do you know who that actor is? 312-981-7200. Give us a call. We'll find our winner after this break.
Welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop, and let's play it again.
Of course, you know, Will, Claudia was alive, you wouldn't be doing this.
We're going to talk to Jim from Chicago. Hey, Jim.
Hello.
Glad to have you with us.
Glad to be here.
Great. Who is that actor?
That was Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman. He has a very distinct voice, and you are a winner, Jim. You have won a Christmas package, including a Lightkeeper Pro, your complete tool for repairing holiday light sets, and we hope your light sets don't need too much repairing, and a scent keeper for real Christmas tree scent on your artificial tree. You can visit lightkeeperpro.com for more information on that, and we're so thrilled to give you that package.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim,
that.
For calling in.
You're welcome. Thanks, Jim. All right, it's time. Thank you very much. It's time for The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective. This was a detective character created by Dashiell Hammett for the Maltese Falcon, Lisa. He was a hard-boiled, cold, detached detective with a keen eye for detail. And he was he had his own justice. He was, he was like a vigilante kind of a detective, really. He didn't mess around. Humphrey Bogart played him in the 1941 film that led to the 1946 radio series, which was directed by William Spear, the same director of Suspense. And newcomer Howard Duff starred as Sam Spade, and Lorene Tuttle was his secretary, Effie Perrine. I think you're going to love this show. This is called The Farmer's Daughter Caper. It stars Howard Duff from September 3rd, 1950, part one of The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective.
Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic and the new Wild Root Liquid Cream Shampoo present The Adventures of Sam Spade.
Sam Spade Detective Agency.
Me, sweetheart.
Oh. Sam, I'm glad you're back in town.
So am I, Effie, so am I. Confidentially, I didn't think I'd make it. Confidentially, that is.
Was it dangerous, Sam?
I should say it was. Why, for the past 24 hours, I've been at it hammer and tongs over hill and dale, through shot and shell. It was enough to turn any ordinary man's blood to ice and his hair pure white.
Oh, that sounds terrifying, Sam.
I wish it had been only terrifying, Effie. It was blood-curdling, spine-chilling, hair-raising. I was bored. It was also rural and countrified.
Well, what happened, Sam? Tell me.
You've heard of the Mums and the Coys?
No.
And the Boston Massacre?
No.
Custer's Last Stand?
No.
Well, put them all together and they spell what I'll shortly be in to dictate, a report which I call in a burst of clever literary plagiarism, The Farmer's Daughter Caper.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective, starring Howard Duff, produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Presented by the makers of Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. the non-alcoholic hair tonic that contains lanolin. And now, with Howard Duff as Spade, Wild Root brings to the air the greatest private detective of them all in The Adventures of Sam Spade. Effie.
I'm right here, Sam.
Pull up all the shades.
All right, Sam.
Now, turn on every light in the place.
But it's daylight.
Do what I say.
All right, Sam.
Now, check the closets.
But what for?
For snipers. What do you think?
All right, Sam. Nobody here.
Okay. I guess it's safe to come all the way in.
Sam, I don't understand.
Effie, it's just that I don't ever want to be caught in the dark again, especially when people are shooting at me. I want to see every nook and cranny of every square foot of land that surrounds me.
Sam, who was shooting at you? Where?
They were shooting from the left, from the right, from up above, down below, everywhere. Death was winging in on every breeze that blew, and they all blew my way.
Oh, Sam, now stop this. I'm just dying of curiosity.
When my time comes, I hope that's all I ever die of. Ready?
Yeah.
Date this week to Mr. Elliot Parson, Parson Drive Yourself Garage, 1618 St. Charles Street, San Francisco 13, California. From Samuel Spade, license number 137596. Subject, the farmer's daughter caper. Dear Mr. Parson, I feel you have an explanation coming, one that you can pass along to your insurance company as to why the car I rented from you last week appeared as late as it did and in the condition it did. As you know, I rented said vehicle to drive to Middletown to bail a client out of the drunk tank. On the way back, a native showed me a shortcut, and I'll get him if it's the last thing I do. Dusk was falling, and so were my eyelids, when I saw a sign that said, Tourists Invited. Behind it stood a ramshackle farmhouse in a surly woodland setting. I should never have knocked on that farmhouse door, but then I wouldn't have had any story to tell, would I?
Good evening, young man.
Good evening, madam. I'm afraid I need a room for the night.
Well, of course you do. Land sakes, you're tired. I can tell by your eyes. Been on the road long?
Too long.
Land sakes, of course you have. Come in, please.
Thank you, ma'am.
You'll find this is the homiest tourist home in California.
Really like mother's, eh?
Like your grandmother's. Huh. No electricity, no phones, just quiet.
I see.
Now, I have two rooms, a $3 one and a $5 one. Which one do you think you'd like?
What's the difference?
One less blanket, one squeaky spring, and with the $3 one, you might have to take a walk.
I'll take the $5 one, thank you.
I'm Mrs. Elkins. Mrs. Bert Elkins. Who might you be?
Sam Spade.
Spade? Land sakes, that's a very unusual name. Mm-hmm. And who are you traveling with, Mr. Spade?
I'm alone.
Oh, I mean what company? We only accept traveling salesmen. You realize that.
Oh, yes. Well, I'm traveling for the makers of Mouton mustache wax.
Oh, use it all the time.
You are well-groomed, madam.
You will go far, young man.
Yeah, but before that, I'd like to go to bed.
Well, come on. This way.
She led me upstairs to my $5 room and left me. As lumpy as it was, the bed invited me, but I decided to shave first and thus facilitate an early start in the morning. I poured myself a drink out of my traveling bar kit and then stepped in to shave. It wasn't easy because all I had for light in there was an oil lamp. When I came back to the bedroom with a lamp in one hand, I stopped short in utter surprise. I'd heard about these things in traveling salesman stories, but I never expected to see it. She was sitting in an armchair, smoking a cigarette. High heels, silk stockings, light rayon dress, and a face right off the cover of Cosmopolitan.
Hello, Sam.
Hello.
Mary Smith.
Huh?
Hope you don't mind me just barging in.
Well, no, that is,
Afraid I'll bite you?
Never entered my mind.
Well, I might. I'm so tired of talking to myself, I need someone like you. You know, you're not bad to look at.
Who, me?
Where do you live? What do you do for a living?
Well, I guess you'd call me independently wealthy. I wish someone would.
How nice. San Francisco?
There must be some fog on my lapel.
Look, Sam, I'll give it to you straight. I want to get out of here, go to San Francisco. Could you take a passenger tomorrow?
Well, what would your mother say?
She's my aunt. What do I care what she says? I don't belong on a farm. Out in a west wet pasture ruins my nylons. I'm a city girl, Philadelphia.
Why did you leave?
My parents died. Look, Sam, I won't be a burden to you. I just want to get to San Francisco. After that, I'm on my own. Sam, take me with you. Please take me with you. You won't regret it.
Well, what am I going to do with this lamp?
Who cares? Oh, Sam.
What? I thought I'd find something like this going on in here.
And Lord, I...
Get out of here. Go back to your room, young lady. Go on. Now, Mr. Spade.
It does look bad, doesn't it?
Oh, I'm not blaming you, Mr. Spade. Land's sakes, it's her. She ain't responsible for what she does. She's like this all the time.
Oh, I see.
Now, when I go out, you just lock your door. Just keep it locked.
But, ma'am, this is a $5 room. A sleepless hour later, I heard something slide under my door. I looked and found it was a note that read, Mr. Spade, Sam, please unlock your door, and when the house is quiet, I'll come and see you. I'm desperate, terribly, terribly desperate. Don't leave me. Give me a chance to tell you what it's all about, please. Stupid me, I unlocked my door, dressed again, and waited. An hour and a half later, I heard my doorknob turning in the dark. The door opened quietly and quickly.
Sam, the things that go on in this house, they're insane.
Oh.
I've been here 3 months. When my father died, I had no money, and because Aunt Maud was my only relative, I came here. And ever since I came, they never let me out of the house for more than an hour. They never let me see anyone or do anything.
Why?
I wish I knew. 5 days ago, Uncle Bert left early one morning. He hasn't come back since. Aunt Maud says he's away on business. He doesn't have any business.
Well, even so, that doesn't seem strange to me.
Then there's my dog.
What about it?
It disappeared the same night Bert did. He told me it ran away. I know it didn't. I've had it for 3 years. It never ran away.
Well, what do you think?
Well, I was sure I could hear it howling somewhere for 2 or 3 nights. Then the howling stopped. I think I know where it is, but I don't know why. It scares me.
Well, where do you think it is?
Sam, you're going to think I'm crazy right out of my mind, but... Well, about 150 yards behind the house, there's a hillside with an old cave in it.
Oh, an old cave.
I don't know what it's used for, but yesterday I saw the whole front end of it closed. Closed with dirt. Sam, they buried that dog alive in that cave. I know it.
Oh, wait a minute now. Did you ask Mrs. Elkins?
Yes. All she said was the dog ran away and mind your own business. She told me to leave the cave alone. Sam, let's go out there and look. Please.
Well, So big, brave, stupid Sam, idiot boy, allowed her to show me the back way out of the house, and we sneaked to the barn together. She found a shovel, and we walked to the cave. When my eyes got accustomed to the dark, I saw the entrance had been covered with dirt, and recently. I took the shovel while she stood watching. I cleared half of the dirt away and worked as quietly as I could, but apparently not quietly enough. A flashlight suddenly hit both of us in the face and a shotgun barrel flashed in the beam.
Get away from there before I shoot your head off.
Point that thing someplace else, please, ma'am.
Just what do you think you're doing, mister?
Digging.
Mary, you get back to the house.
No. Aunt Maud, I won't.
Get back to the house before I count three or I'll put a load of buckshot right through you now. One.
Aunt Maud, my dog is in there.
Two.
All right, I'll...
Now, Mrs. Elkins, suppose you put that gun down and tell me what this is all about.
I got one thing to say to you, mister. Get in your car and get out of here and don't waste any time doing it.
But, madam...
Your suitcase is in the car and your $5 is with it.
Yeah, but...
Now get, or I shoot you as a trespasser. And I could do it, mister. Land sakes, I could do it. Now get!
So I got, under guard, to my car. I got in and drove off. Mrs. Elkins stood in the driveway with a shotgun still pointed at me until I was out of sight. I turned left at the first crossroad, parked the car, and cut through the woods back to the farm. I could see a light in the living room. Nobody was in or near the barn. And when I got to the cave, there wasn't a sound anywhere. I picked up the shovel I'd dropped and started digging again. 30 minutes later, the shovel broke a small hole through into that cave, and a stifling blast of fetid air rushed out, and something leaped out at me in the dark. And it wasn't the dog. It was a human hand on a human arm.
The makers of Wild Root Cream Oil are presenting the weekly Sunday adventure of America's favorite private detective, Sam Spade.
Well,
Lisa, can you hand me some of your wild root cream oil?
Well, that's so funny you said that, because I was going to ask you if you noticed my hair looked different tonight.
Yeah.
I use my wild root cream oil.
Let me just get a little of that greasy stuff off your hair.
I put a little of that oil, and it does wonders for
wild
my hair.
Wild root cream oil for the
shining
hair.
Shining.
Part
tonight.
One of the Adventures of Sam Spade Detective. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes. What's this? This isn't disco.
It's Junith.
It's who?
Junith.
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 Junith. Who's Junip?
Junip.
A really good band.
Junip?
Like Juniper.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know this music. It sounds cool, though. I can listen to this.
You are listening to this.
It is, what time is it?
It's 12:36 in the morning.
Wow.
On Sunday.
Yeah. Hey, happy Sunday, Lisa.
Yeah.
We're here, I still can't figure it out how we're on the air 6 hours, but we're 3 days we're on the air. We're on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
Well, Monday only for 2 hours.
Yeah, well, I don't care.
Okay.
We still are on the air 3 days.
I think you should get paid extra.
We're only on the air 6 hours. It doesn't make any sense to me.
You should get paid a little extra for that.
Of course.
A little bonus for the third day.
As we talked about earlier, I got kicked out of college, so I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's maybe they learned me that stuff after I got kicked out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're just saying, mm-hmm.
Whatever you say.
Yeah. All right. Well,
I'm trying to agree with you, which is unusual.
Yeah.
I'm trying really hard.
You know, Lisa, we've had a lot of people that have been saying they want to hear yours truly, Johnny Dollar, right?
That is true.
So tonight, when we come back here, tonight, we will be back here at 11 p.m., and we will play yours truly, Johnny Dollar,
yep,
along with Candy Matson, which is a female detective series. And then my favorite detective of all time, Boston Blackie. And I named my company after Boston Blackie. The name of my company is Black Eye Entertainment. And that's because of Boston Blackie. Do you know the whole origin of the company name?
Well, only because we've talked about it before.
Yeah, Boston Blackie, they called him Blackie because he had very dark eyes. It was a character, not a real guy. He was a made-up character. But they called him, he was from Boston, and they called him Boston Blackie because he had very dark eyes, black eyes. And so I named my company Black Eye Entertainment after Boston Blackie. So there you go. So there. I don't know what that means to anybody, if it's going to...
Well, as long as it means something to you.
It does. It means something
so
to me.
That's what's important.
All right, we're tuning into The Adventures of Sam Spade Detective with the Farmer's Daughter Caper, Howard Duff. Here's the conclusion to The Adventures of Sam Spade Detective.
And now, back to The Farmer's Daughter Caper. Tonight's adventure with Sam Spade.
Already full of surprises. I should have been ready for the next one, but I wasn't. The loose earth, which had blocked the entrance to the cave, suddenly fell away, and I fell with it. Then I heard something like nothing on earth. Nails dragged across my face, taking skin and flesh with them. I twisted and went down, and something went down with me. The snarl became a voice.
Bury me alive! Bury me alive! I'll kill you! I'll kill you!
And he did his best, which was pretty good. Finally, I got a good hold on him and sat on his chest. After that, I lit a match and looked at a tall, thin man in his middle 40s. He was caked with mud from head to foot. His hands were impossibly torn and bleeding. I could guess why. Judging from the stubble on his face, he'd been bottled up in that cave at least 5 days. How he was still alive, I didn't know. He acted like a madman, and he had every right to. But surprise, when his eyelids fluttered open again, he read a very sane line.
I'm all done in. You got a drink, friend?
Not on me.
They hit me on the head and left me there. They thought I'd stay in there forever. Forever.
Who put you there? Who did it?
But they couldn't keep me there. I took my way out, didn't I? Didn't I? I took my way out, didn't I?
The force of the bullets knocked them halfway back down the incline of the cave. All I could do was hit the dirt. Finally, when it seemed safe, I broke cover and ran smack into somebody carrying two bags.
Oh, no,
please, please.
Let's have a look at you.
Sam, it's me. Sam, I knew you wouldn't go away without me. I knew it. I couldn't stay in that awful house any longer.
Remember that now. Who was that shooting at?
I don't know.
Where's your aunt?
House, I suppose. I slipped out the back way.
Any visitors tonight?
No. What is it? What is it?
I think I found your Uncle Bert. Come on. I led her back to the cave entrance and showed her the body of the man I'd dragged out. I watched her face a long time as she looked at him very carefully.
That's not Uncle Bert, Sam.
Really?
No. It's Mr. Linden, jewelry salesman, came to the place a few nights ago.
5 nights ago?
Yes. Yes, come to think of it.
The same night your uncle disappeared. Tell me, did you ask Mr. Linden to take you back to San Francisco the same way you asked me?
I...
Did you?
Yes. He said he would. He got up early and left without me.
He didn't get far. What kind of car was he driving?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Do you drive a car?
Yes, but
here. Mine's down the road about 500 yards. Go to the nearest phone and call a highway patrol, a sheriff, anybody who represents law. Got that?
Yes, yes. I know exactly what to do.
To make sure we were both thinking of the same thing to do, I followed her in the dark, watched her get into the car I rented from you, and drive off. Then I turned around, put a new clip in my gun, and walked back to the old homestead. It was still very homey. By the light of an oil lamp, Mrs. Elkins was peacefully knitting what looked like a shroud.
Why, Mr. Spade?
Why, Mrs. Elkins?
Land sakes.
Now that we got that out of the way, let's get down to business.
If you're here to make trouble, young man, believe me, I can handle trouble. My kind of stock know about trouble.
Well, suppose you tell me about the trouble I just had, or haven't you heard all the shots that were fired around here tonight?
Shots? My. Seems I would have heard gunshots.
Seems you would. Look, I've got a sheriff on the way.
Have you, Mr. Spade? Why?
I suppose you didn't hear the shooting.
Oh, yes, I'd forgotten. Was anyone hurt?
A man named Linden. He's dead.
Linden. Now, that sounds familiar.
It should. He stayed here 5 nights ago. He was a jewelry salesman.
Yes, now I remember. You say he's dead?
Somebody tried to bury him alive in your little cave.
How awful. I do declare.
I thought you would. Well?
You must be joshing, Mr. Spade.
I'm not joshing at all, Mrs. Elkins.
Well, buried alive, you say.
Look, let's talk just like plain folks. Where's your husband? Where's the jewelry samples you probably stole from Linden? Is there anything else you want to say?
Gunshots, eh? Well.
I left the sweet old thing knitting and rocking and made my way through the house looking for guns, jewelry, and killers. I got downstairs in time to see Mrs. Elkins disappear out the front door. When I tried to follow, I stumbled over the rocking chair, which was indeed a lucky thing for me. After a few minutes of silence, bravely crawling on my stomach, I followed the shadows of the house until they blended into the shadows of a large, hulking building, which happened to be the barn. Inside, I bumped my head on the radiator of a car. Naturally, I didn't find any keys in it, but I did find a familiar jewelry salesman-type mud-soaked corpse. Trying to remember how to cross ignition wires, I heard the hum of a motor and saw two headlight beams swinging up the driveway. They lasted as long as any other lights. The car came to a lurching stop, and a thick-set figure in a Stetson hat stumbled towards me, tugging at a gun.
That burnt gold flame cuff thing, I...
Undo the flap.
You old thing. Huh? Put your hands up, whoever you are.
You be the sheriff?
You're dead blame right on the sheriff. You're dead blame right on the sheriff. Who are you? What's the idea of shooting the lights out in my car?
My car.
Oh, you Slade?
Spade.
Well, I'm Homer Pickett, sheriff of this county. Homer. The girl come, woke me up, said all sorts of funny things going on around here. Said there'd been a murder. Now, who's killed? What's going on, Stan?
Sam. Well, for one thing, somebody's been trying all sorts of ammunition on me for size.
You don't say.
I do say, Mr. Sheriff.
Why?
Because I found a man in a cave who'd been left there to die.
Want to look at the corpse?
You can look at him right here. He's sitting in this car.
So, yeah. How'd he get here?
Somebody moved him here.
Shouldn't have moved a corpse till the police examine it.
I didn't move it.
Huh?
Now, listen closely. Listening?
Huh?
I found the man. He was still alive. Then somebody shot him.
Shouldn't have moved him.
Then they tried to kill me because I found him. When they didn't kill me, they decided to hide his body.
Illegal.
They probably intended to drive away and dispose of it so there'd be no evidence when an efficient, smart, alert, courageous police officer like yourself came around to ask questions.
Hey, that sounds reasonable. Who's behind all this?
Well, Mrs. Elkins threatened me once and tried to kill me once.
Ma! Well, land sake.
That's her, yes.
I want to talk to her. Where's she?
Roaming the countryside with a gun, no doubt.
Well, we'll have to clear all this up, see what it's all about. Now, who's this fellow in the car?
His name's James Linden.
Got a pencil? Better write that down. Tilden, huh?
Linden. By any strange coincidence, Sheriff, do you happen to know a man named Dundee, San Francisco homicide?
Lieutenant Dundee, old Tom.
Old Tom, yes.
Shucks, I learned everything I know about police work from him.
Yeah, well, that's fair.
And law's law. Dundee always said...
Yeah, I've heard him say it, Sheriff, but...
And I aim to enforce it around here. One side, Mr. Slade.
Spade. You'll be sorry. Well.
Now, look here, all you Elkins. This Homer Pickett talking... And I ain't no small-town constable. I'm the sheriff of this county. You'll get a square deal from me, but first I order you in the name of the law to throw down your guns. Well?
Oh, my. Oh. You all right?
Nothing but my feelings hurt. Oh,
I was.
I thought that'd do some good.
Now, you know. Hey, look, maybe it did do some good. Came across the farmyard as the first light was showing in the eastern sky. Her hands were above her head. One held a shotgun.
Maud! Get back where you belong, Maud!
We could hear, but we couldn't see him. Maud stopped, hesitated for a moment, and then began running towards us. She almost made it.
No!
I ran out to drag her back, expecting any second to be the target for the night. There was a sudden and curious silence as I pulled her into the barn. She was still alive.
That man's been missing everybody all night. Never thought he'd be able to hit me.
Easy.
I come from good stock. I'm no criminal, Mr. Spade. Sheriff, you know that.
Yeah, I know, Maud. I know.
Let me take a look at you. You'll be okay.
Don't blame Bert too much. He wanted to have money once in his life. So when this man came along with all the jewelry, Bert went out of his mind, I guess. He put the man in the cave. And the dog, too. So the dog wouldn't call attention to him. And then he took the man's car, went into San Francisco to try to sell the jewels and the underwear.
No luck, huh?
Bert says they laughed at him. The jewels were just paste, samples.
And he came back and found me at the cave, and he figured he had to knock us both off.
I just stuck by him all the way. Now he's like a tiger that smelt blood. No telling what he'll do.
We'll have to get help, Spade. Roadblocks, bloodhound.
No. No, this is his land. You won't run. He'll hide here.
Where?
Why, in the cave.
Well, I reasoned, one, that no matter how much a man loved his land, he was not going to let himself be trapped in a cave with only one exit, and two, it followed, therefore, that if he did hide in the cave, there was more than one way out, which the late Linden hadn't found. Sheriff Pickett volunteered to watch the front of the cave while I looked around for a rear exit. After a 20-minute search, which netted me nothing, I remembered the car parked inside the barn and how quickly Elkins had carried Linden's body to it. I went back there and took a look around. In a corner of the barn, I found a trail of dirt leading to a bale of hay. When I moved the bale, I found, you guessed it, a trap door. I pulled it open, caught a familiar whiff of used-up air, and lowered myself into a black hole that turned out to be a passageway. I cautiously made my way forward in the darkness for a few yards.
Who is it? Who is it?
I pressed back against the dirt wall, listening to him approach. When I figured he was close enough, I threw a cloud of dirt toward him across the passageway. His gun flashed and lit up the whole place for a second, and I fired three times. I waited, then I went towards him. He was lying on his back. I kicked his gun away, and when I bent over him to feel his pulse, he suddenly came to life. Something crashed against the side of my head, and everything became darker than the inside of a cave. The next thing I knew, I was looking at a pair of red-rimmed eyes. Several minutes had gone by.
Thought you was a goner for sure. You ain't used to this country fighting, are you?
Is this country liquor, Sheriff?
Yeah.
Give me.
Yeah, country liquor. Tell me, Sheriff, did you by any chance...
Why, sure. Of course I did. I got him, Slade.
Period and a report.
Sam! Do you mean to tell me you let a little country sheriff outdo you?
Well, Effie, Homer Pickett's coming up for re-election next fall, and besides, you might think I was egotistical if I told you how it really ended.
But your reputation! You're the greatest private detective of them all.
And so I can afford to be generous. Now, not another word. Scoot, type that up.
Here it is, Sam.
Let me see. Here. F, you rewrote the ending.
I had to, Sam. You're much too modest.
And Sam Spade, with a knot of cold fury in the pit of his stomach, a vindictive fire in his eyes, stepped wearily over the loose rocks on the cave floor to do battle with the thing that loomed up in the darkness ahead. The thing's roar filled the night with terror. But Sam Spade, dauntless and knowing not fear, stepped up to the monster, laughed in its hairy face, and with one quick convulsion of his powerful shoulder muscles, dropped the thing in its tracks. I see. Well, is that the way you think it ended, Effie?
Oh, Sam, I guess I was being a little foolish. I'll change it.
No. No, as long as you've done it this way, we'll leave it this way. Can't waste paper.
No, I'll change it, Sam.
Leave it!
Oh! Sam.
Yeah?
I copied that ending out of an old Black Mask magazine.
You what? It's...
Don't be mad.
Come here. Come here.
Where are you?
I copied that out of an old whiz bang.
Oh, Sam. Night.
Good night, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade are produced and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade is played by Howard Duff. Loreen Tuttle is Effie. Tonight's adventure with Sam Spade was written for radio by John Michael Hayes and E. Jack Newman. Musical direction by Lud Gluskin, with score composed by Pierre and Renee Garrigan. Join us again next Sunday when producer William Spear presents another adventure with Sam Spade. Brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men and women and children, too. This is Dick Joy speaking.
Stay tuned for the Summer Symphony with Katherine Grayson on NBC.
That is The Adventures of Sam Spade, detective with Howard Duff as Sam Spade. He was married to Ida Lupino. Did you know that, Lisa Wolf?
Only from you, Carl.
Oh, okay.
You are my expert.
Yeah, the Farmer's Daughter's Caper from September 3rd. 1950, sponsored by my favorite hair tonic, Wild Root Cream Oil.
We have
a listener. I use it all the time.
Who said he or she used to use it back in the day. And I think it was a he, and he said it used to keep his hair slicked back.
Yeah,
and
it'll
that
keep
it worked very well.
And don't go anywhere near a flame.
Right.
Because you could have a hair full of flame.
Well, I kind of like that slick back look.
Yes, you do. That's Sam Spade. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's much more here on the WGN Radio Theater. WGN Radio Theater, that's the name of this radio show, every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. until 2 o'clock in the morning. Saturday.
In the park.
In the park. Wish it was the 4th of July.
I think it was.
Well, I actually wish it was.
No, I think it was.
No, I wish it was. I wish it was the 4th of July because it wouldn't be so cold out. Although it's not, it's been a pretty good winter so far, right?
It's not really winter
yet. It's not
yet.
Winter yet. It's fall.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I'm
yeah.
going golfing again next Wednesday.
Yeah, it's been nice. Kind of yeah. like an Indian fall.
Indian fall.
Indian fall. Can you say that, or do we have to say Native American fall?
Yeah, I think it's probably incorrect.
I'll
yeah.
make sure I'm
politically sure everything
correct. I
want to
be politically correct.
That's impossible for you. Not a chance.
It is 8 minutes after 1 a.m. on a Sunday morning, and we are playing your favorite classic radio shows. We do that every Saturday and Sunday here on the WGN Radio Theater. And this weekend, we have all detective shows. So we have an episode of Nero Wolfe coming your way, and then tomorrow it's Candy Matson. We have Johnny Dollar and then Boston Blackie, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity School, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars as Rita Repulsa in the upcoming adventure Power Rangers, about a group of kids who are infused with superpowers and save the world.
What do they win?
A Christmas package, including a Lightkeeper Pro, the perfect holiday gift.
All right, Christmas is right around the corner, so this is a great gift or a great prize for yourself. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 is the number to call. Now, here's a hint. This actress worked at the bookstore on the movie 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Are you looking for something?
Is there something I should be looking for?
Oh, we have a lot of books, so... Maybe it depends on what you like.
This is the first time I ever saw this actress. It was in this movie. Oh, my gosh.
I can't forget that
scene. I love this actress.
I do, too.
She's so great. All right, call us if you know who that is. 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
We are back. This is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolfe. And we are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
Are you looking for something?
Is there something I should be looking for?
We have a lot of books, so maybe it depends on what you like.
I just love this movie.
I love this movie, too. We've got Kevin on the line from Oak Forest. Hi, Kevin.
Hello.
Are you a big fan of the 40-Year-Old Virgin?
Yeah, it was a good movie.
Yeah, it was a good movie. Do you recognize this actress?
Yeah, it was Elizabeth Banks.
Elizabeth Banks, of course. You are a winner, Kevin. You won a Christmas package. It includes a Lightkeeper Pro. Everybody loves the Lightkeeper Pro, your complete tool for repairing holiday light scents, and a scent keeper for a real Christmas tree scent on your artificial tree. You can check all of that out at lightkeeperpro.com. Thank you so much, Kevin. We're so glad that you're listening and calling in.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks, Kevin. All right, this is the WGN Radio Theater, and it's time for the new Adventures of Nero Wolfe, a good detective series. Sidney Greenstreet starred as Rex Stout's gargantuan gourmet. It first aired in 1943, but it didn't have Sidney Greenstreet on the show back then. It had a different actor. His name was, you know who it was? Santos Ortega. And then Louis Van Ruten. But the best one, the best series, there was about four or five of these, was the one that came on the air back in 1950 with Sidney Greenstreet as Nero Wolfe. And this is an episode called The Vanishing Shells. It's from February 2nd, 1951. Here's part one of the new adventures of Nero Wolfe.
Ladies and gentlemen, the ringing of that phone bell means mystery, adventure.
Nero Wolfe's office, Archie Goodwin speaking. Mr. Wolfe? No, he isn't. Huh? Oh, well, for you, maybe he is.
I'm not here.
Oh, yes, yeah, he's always here.
I've gone out.
No, no, he seldom ever goes out.
I won't start on anything tonight.
Oh, sure, he'd love to start on a case tonight. What's your name? Oh, that's a beautiful name. Address?
Archie, it's another woman. Hang up.
No, no, no. Honest, I'm not Mr. Wolfe, but I'm his agent. Yeah, I'll be right over, miss. Goodbye.
What's her trouble? Where are you going?
Well, she said she's received some threatening notes and she's afraid to leave her hotel. So long, boss.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's that genius who is the bulkiest, balkiest, most ponderous, and most brilliant detective in the world. Yes, none other than that chair-borne mass of unpredictable intellect, Nero Wolfe. created by Rex Stout and brought to you in a new series of adventures over this NBC network in the person of Mr. Sidney Greenstreet. We prefer to call tonight's story The Case of the Vanishing Shells. It didn't seem to be difficult at first, but, well, I'm not a stupid individual, but so often, I allow myself to become mesmerized by beautiful women. Heaven bless them. Doris Murray was such a woman. She phoned us first late one afternoon about 5 o'clock, then again at 5:30.
Very well, Mr. Goodwin, but I would prefer to see Mr. Wolf.
Well, I said I'd be there at 6, Miss Murray.
I don't want to talk any longer on the phone. Please hurry. There's someone at the door.
I'll see you in the cocktail lounge at your hotel.
At 6 o'clock. That's half an hour. Don't fail. Who is it?
Emil Stoner.
Oh, come in, Emil. You got my call, darling. Here, let me take your briefcase.
I'll just put it here on the piano, Doris.
Oh, I'm terribly upset about those threatening notes, darling. I know it's upset you, too, but I'm determined to find out who it is. I'm not going to let them bluff me out of my first chance to play the star part in one of your shows.
But look, Doris, there's that other part.
Is that all I mean to you? Well, what can they divulge that'll harm us? What?
Several things. And I can't afford her. I mean, at this time...
You're frightened, Emil.
Doris, I'm going to give the star part to Paula.
Paula? You've been divorced for 4 years. Why?
Because I feel she can...
Can play it better. Is that what you're going to say? Well, I can act rings around her.
Now, look, Doris. I know it's a big disappointment to you, but that's the way it is.
Get out. Go on across the hall to Paula. Give her the part. Louse up your show. She and that playwright of hers. Get out, Emil.
But, Doris...
You frightened little... Get out!
I believe, Mr. Wolf, you're making a great mistake in not coming along.
Indeed. I'm sure that what attracts you could not possibly be of interest to me.
A gal needs help. Money is money.
Girls, money. Fooey.
Yeah, well, we could have dinner out for a change. They have one of the finest chefs in town at that hotel.
You're most impolite. I'm trying to read this book.
Poetry.
Archie.
Yes, sir?
Shut up.
But we need money. That filthy green cabbage is necessary to our existence. This may be a tough case, you know.
You're sufficiently intelligent. Sometimes.
If I sat around like you do, I'd weigh 500 pounds, too.
Archie, leave the room. Besides, it's only 300.
What a way to run a business. Orchids, beer, books.
Don't keep the charming client waiting.
Okay, I'm going.
And always remember, there is a telephone.
Thank you, waiter. Oh, good evening, Miss Murray. I'm Archie Goodwin.
Well, I didn't expect... I mean, please sit down.
Well, I think I should explain the absence of Nero Wolf. There's so much of him that it's not too convenient to transport it about. I do all the outside work.
And I'm sure you do it well.
Well, you know, some women call me Goodwin and some call me Mr. Goodwin. And the unattached call me Archie.
Hello, Archie.
Oh, splendid. I'm glad to hear it. Now we can get right down to the nasty old business that's troubling you, Doris.
First, here's the $500 retainer fee.
Well, thank you. Now, what's the note about?
Well, there are two notes, both printed by hand.
Uh-huh.
Oh, will you hand me my purse, please?
Oh, sure.
Thank you.
Oh. I see. Doris Murray. If you fail to withdraw from the cast of Stoner's next production by start of rehearsals Monday, both you and Stoner will have a blasted reputation and perhaps other injuries from which you will be unable to recover.
The other one is like it, only more vehement.
Someone or a group of someones are intent on keeping you out of Stoner's shows, huh? It's too bad. His next one is said to be a sure smash hit and a star-making part for the leading woman.
Yes, Emil Stoner wants me to play it. He's been planning on it ever since David Banning wrote the play.
What does David Banning think of you playing the part?
Well, I don't think he's too enthused about it. You see, Mr. Stoner and Paula Kenyon have been divorced for 4 years, but she has continued to be his top leading woman. Now she's engaged to David Banning, who wrote this play.
Oh, makes things a bit difficult.
Well, of course, Rick Hunter, Stoner's director, is...
Hunter's somewhat in favor of your playing the part.
Well, Rick Hunter is very fond of my work.
And very fond of you as well, huh?
Yes, unfortunately. I like Rick Hunter tremendously, but Amos Stoner has been of greater interest to me. In fact, we're more or less engaged, Mr. Goodwin.
Oh, well, had any words lately with the ex-Mrs. Stoner, Paula Kenyon, is that her name?
Paul and I were great friends when I first joined the Stoner Productions, but I don't know, I don't think she appreciated the fact that Mr. Stoner and Rick Hunter, the director, took such an interest in me.
Tell me, did you ever think you were in love with Rick Hunter?
Yes, at first I was thrilled by his artistic imagination. And then as time went on, I realized that he was subject to melancholia. Mr. Stoner was more stable, and I needed someone older to advise me.
Well, what's wrong with your reputation and Mr. Stoner's?
Well, there's nothing I fear, but I'm afraid Mr. Stoner is somewhat disturbed by these threats. He feels there's something in his past of sufficient import to really harm him. I think it's nonsense.
Alan, what we have to do is uncover this person or persons before you end up with ruined careers on Broadway. Where does the ex-Mrs. Stoner live?
Well, as a matter of fact, she lives just down the hall from me. Lived here for years.
Oh, well, I think it's advisable, honey, that you stay close to your room until we solve this thing.
Oh, but I'm not afraid for my life, Archie.
No? Well, I am. I'll see you into your room, Doris.
Oh, now, please, Mr. Goodwin, if you...
Oh, you don't trust the boy, huh?
Oh, well, I...
Such beautiful eyes.
Oh, I...
Lovely red hair. Yeah. You can have the lead in my new play. I never wrote one, but for you, I'll try anything.
Come along.
Here's your bag.
Well, hello, Doris.
Oh, hello, Rick. Mr. Goodwin, this is Rick Hunter.
Hiya, Hunter. Nice shows you've been putting on.
I've just been admiring your work, Goodwin.
Yeah, oh, well, that's nice. I'm glad. Nothing like encouragement for a beginner, Mr. Hunter.
You're ready for the big time, from what I saw. Heard from Emil Stoner today, Doris?
I talked to him once this morning. Have you been sitting in the cocktail lounge all afternoon?
Yeah. That I have, honey. I want to see you play that lead, baby. And I think I just about got it all settled.
Dreaming about it won't settle it. Liquor never accomplished anything in itself, Rick. Come on, Mr. Goodwin.
He's a very jealous man, Doris. In fact, right now, I can feel his thoughts piercing me between the shoulder blades. Oh, excuse me, here's a phone book.
Yes, Archie?
How do you know it's Archie?
I felt the time was exactly right for you to call.
I wish you felt it was time to earn some money.
Is this a worthwhile case?
Well, she's a beautiful redhead, and,
That, of course, makes it very worthwhile.
Yeah, well, I got $500 as a retainer.
Phooey, a pittance, and probably all you'll ever get.
What do you mean by that?
She's probably guilty.
Now, look, boss, she's the victim. Received notes threatening her reputation and her health if she plays the star part in Emil Stoner's new production. Also, they threatened Emil Stoner likewise. The playwright, Dave Banning, is engaged to Paula Kenyon. Incidentally, she lives here at the hotel, too, just down the hall from Doris.
I remember her. And the playwright wants Paula Kenyon to play the part. Well, Archie, you have only the beginning. It is probably too late to prevent whatever is going to happen.
Like what, for instance?
Have you found a body yet? Call me after you find the body.
What body? There's no body.
But there will be, Archie. There's always a body where you are concerned. Either a body beautiful or a dead one. Bye.
Thanks for seeing me to my room, Archie.
Oh, I'm not stopping here, Doris. I'll take a look inside.
But I'm not...
Oh, I insist. Part of my job, you know. If I fail to take every precaution, Mr. Wolf would never... Well, look in that chair.
Emil?
Emil Stoner? Oh, three red dots on his shirt front. Doris, hold on.
I'm all right. Yes, I'm all right.
All right, sit down. That's it. Now, let's see. The body's still warm. What's this crumpled in his left hand? A horoscope. Between the fingers of his right hand, an unlit cigarette. Monogram PK.
Paula Kenyon.
This horoscope is for March. Something he picked up from your desk here?
I don't believe in astrology.
Where'd he get this cigarette with Paula Kenyon's monogram?
Oh, poor Emil. Poor Emil. I didn't believe anyone would really harm us. Why was I so stubborn?
When did you see him last?
Please, shouldn't we do something? Call the police?
No, not yet. When did you see him?
Why, I saw him this morning. I'm so shocked I can hardly think clearly.
Doris.
Yes?
There's a briefcase here on the piano with a newspaper on top of it.
What? Oh, It is, yes. It's Amos. He must have left it here this morning.
That's strange. Emil Stoner was bald, but...
But what?
Well, I'm sure he's a man who always wore a hat, but I see no hat.
He must have come up the elevator as I went down to meet you.
Who would know he'd come up here? Your director, Rick Hunter, he said he'd been in the bar all afternoon. What else was it he said? Thought he had everything just about settled.
Oh, no, Rick couldn't. He just... Oh, Mr. Goodwin, I couldn't believe that.
I can believe anything about anybody. I learned that the hard way. In my book, everybody's guilty until proved otherwise. Even you, baby.
What?
Even you. Yeah. A Herald Tribune newspaper. Are you sure you haven't seen him since this morning, Doris?
What are you doing? Absolutely nothing. Someone came in here and shot him. Call the police. I insist. Maybe.
What?
Maybe I did leave my door unlocked. Why did I do that?
Well, they couldn't have opened the door otherwise, could he?
No.
Give me the check room, please. Oh, hello. Do you know Mr. Emil Stoner, the producer? You do? Well, tell me, did he check his hat with you this afternoon or this evening? He didn't, huh? All right, thanks. He must have carried it up here to this floor. Doris, do you have a gun?
I own a gun. A small 25 automatic. But it's not here.
Where is it?
I had the handle repaired and it's been in my dressing room for a week or two.
I hate to do this, Doris, but I'm going to move the body away from the back of that chair. Oh. There. Yeah, three wounds. One bullet went through the upper part of the chest, out the middle of the back. I'd say right through the heart. By the angle of the wound, he was shot while sitting down.
Please, Mr. Goodwin, must we stay here?
I want to give this room a thorough going over. We'll go down to the lobby. I want to use that phone booth again. And, Doris, I hope...
I know what you're going to say. You hope that gun of mine...
is still in your dressing room at the theater.
If not, there could be a lot of trouble for that girl right there, Lisa.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Mm.
New Adventures of Nero Wolf will have more of the Vanishing Shells in just a few minutes. All right, before we tune into the conclusion to the New Adventures of Nero Wolf, I want to remind all of our listeners, once again, we have a website you can go to, and all you have to do is put your first name, last name, and email address, and I will send you every single Monday an email that has a link to download and collect a free classic radio show. And one week you might get Suspense, the next week Fred Allen, the next week Gunsmoke, Dragnet, on and on and on, all your favorites. And it's a way of thanking you for listening to the show. I want to send you an email that has a link to collect a free classic radio show every single week. And that show will be digitally remastered. It'll sound just like the shows we play here. It'll also have pictures of the stars in that show, historical information, the date, original broadcast date, all kinds of fun stuff. So free service for our listeners. Just go to free, F-R-E-E, radioclassics.com. That's free, not three, not the numeral three, free, radioclassics.com. Subscribe right now, and well, today's Sunday, right? So tomorrow you'll get an email from me with a radio show.
It's pretty darn nice of you, Carl.
I'm trying to think which one it is. Well, I know we have some Christmas ones. I've loaded Christmas shows throughout December that we'll be sending people. So you'll get some great stuff. You get comedies, detective mysteries, sci-fi, western every single week. 52 shows every year. And you can unsubscribe anytime you want. So do go to freeradioclassics.com and subscribe right away. All right, time now for the conclusion to The Vanishing Shells on the New Adventures of Nero Wolf.
Nero Wolf speaking.
Oh, Mr. Wolf, may I have your autograph? I'm taking a correspondence course in how to be a detective, and I think you're a wizard.
That's so kind of you to say so.
I would be just thrilled to have your autograph on the bottom of a paycheck.
Why are you calling from the phone booth?
What? Huh? Who said I was?
It's obvious. There's no room tone reverberation.
Well, you shouldn't have to ask. You know everything before it happens.
You found the body, then. Happened just before you got there.
Oh, now, look, I took the girl up to a room to be sure it was safe for her to go in, and... Okay. And there, sitting in a big leather chair, was Emil Stoner.
Shot three times with a small caliber gun, dead about an hour. One shot went through the body from the upper part of the chest to the middle of the back. Therefore, he was shot while sitting down. The killer was standing, huh?
I'm listening.
Oh. Well, his left hand was clutching a horoscope folder, and between the index and second finger of the right hand was an unlit cigarette with a monogram on it, PK. Emil Stoner is bald, but there was no hat in the room. However, on the piano was his briefcase, and on top of it, a 4 o'clock afternoon edition of the Herald Tribune.
Better look in the briefcase, Archie. No weapon?
No weapon. But Doris Murray says she owns a .25 caliber automatic, and it's in her dressing room at the theater. Also, she claims she hadn't seen Stoner since this morning.
You found no empty shells about the floor?
None.
What did you do with the bullet?
What bullet?
The one which passed through his chest and lodged in the back of the leather chair. Are you there?
Boss, I'm a very stupid fella.
Stop bragging. The bullet.
Boss, there ain't no hole in the back of that chair. I just realized it. Maybe he was standing up. Then the killer must have been on stilts.
Archie, let us pretend, only pretend, that you're very observant. Now proceed to Paula Kenyon's apartment, just down the hall, you said, and see what she knows without divulging the fact that Stoner is dead, and look sharp.
My gears must be slipping.
Archie, do you know what great event will be celebrated tomorrow?
Yeah, my birthday. What'd you get me?
Cuthbert's correspondence detective course in 4 easy lessons. Bye.
This is Paula's apartment.
No answer. Let's see if it's open. Ah, there's no one in sight. Come on in. Now, look, if anyone walks in on us, we found the door open and we just came in to wait.
Which is the truth, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Ah. Here on the desk, we have a stack of horoscope stars and a box of Paula's monogrammed cigarettes.
Mr. Goodwin.
Huh?
This is Emil's gray fedora hat.
Then he was in this apartment this afternoon. What are you staring at? Oh, small pearl-handled automatic.
Yes.
.25 caliber. Yeah, it's been fired very recently. We won't touch it now. Does it look like yours?
Archie, it is mine.
Yeah. Your initials?
I found old Jenkins, the stage doorman at the theater, to look in my dressing room. And, well, my gun isn't there.
Did you leave the gun out in plain view in the dressing room?
Yes, for several days anyway. Then I put it behind the mirror.
I suppose many people have seen it then.
I'm sure.
I hope, Doris, that your fingerprints are not the only ones on that gun.
If they use my gun to shoot him in my apartment, why would they bring the gun back here and leave it in plain sight?
Maybe they didn't do it just that way.
No.
His hat's here, the gun is here, and yet he's dead in your apartment.
How can you answer that?
Well, maybe he was sitting here waiting for Paula and someone called him out and over to your place and shot him. That's not good. Doesn't make sense. Now, if he was sitting in this chair here and someone entered that door, hey.
What is it?
Look in the chair back. Huh? Little round hole. Start looking for some empty shells around here.
You find something?
No, I want to make a call. He was shot with this automatic. 3 shells were ejected. They certainly vanished.
Nero Wolf speaking.
Archie, I'm in Paula Kenyon's. She's not here. Found his hat, a stack of horoscopes on the desk, box of monogram cigarettes, a .25 automatic which belongs to Miss Murray, recently fired, but not an empty shell in sight. No blood, but a single small hole in the back of the chair near the desk. Doris Murray is with me.
I will call Inspector Kramer now about the body and have ballistics check the bullets with the gun.
And the bullet in the chair back?
Did you find anything of particular importance in Emil Stoner's briefcase?
Yes, I found...
Never mind, bring the girl here at once.
Okay, boss. Say, don't you think I better wait for Paula Kenyon? Uh-oh, here she is. Bye.
Bring her along, too, if you can. Goodbye.
Hello, Paula.
Well, Doris, what are you doing here? I wasn't aware that I left the door unlocked.
Seems to be contagious this evening. I left mine unlocked, too. Hello, Dave. Miss Kenyon, Mr. Goodwin.
Hello, Doris.
Hello.
Archie, this is Dave Banning, the playwright.
How are you, Mr. Banning?
How do you do?
I've heard all about your new play, and I wanted to meet you. Doris thought you might be over here, and the door was ajar, so we, well...
I just walked in. I hope you don't mind, Paula.
Certainly not. I'm used to people just walking in.
We were here a while ago and went down to the cocktail lounge for a while.
When is the play open? Or have you cast it yet?
Mr. Stoner handles that part of it. Are you a prospective investor, Goodwin?
Oh, I've had a number of flings in the business. Matter of fact, I expect to see Mr. Stoner tonight.
You do?
Tonight? Here? I don't understand. What's this fencing all about? Thomas, you're not just visiting me. We've hardly spoken for... Oh.
Is that your gun, Miss Kenyon?
It's yours, Doris.
Yes, that's right, Paula. It was in my dressing room.
When did you see Mr. Stoner last?
I haven't seen him today.
I had lunch with him. Why?
What hat did he wear at lunchtime, Mr. Banning?
Why, the gray fedora.
How did it get here? That's Amos. What is this? What are you two doing here?
Where is Amos? Come on, cut out the melodramatics.
Mr. Stoner is dead.
He's what? Paula.
And without any further explanation, I shall have to ask you to accompany me downtown.
Police?
If you will, please. They're still in the front room, boss. I'll bring them into your office when you're ready.
Yes, R.G., I'm sure they're all anxious to talk. They've been sitting there for an hour now.
Maybe we ought to make some sort of explanation to them, huh?
Why? This sort of technique should work very well in this particular instance.
Yeah, but I don't know about that director, Rick Hunter. He may be difficult.
Does anyone know that you found the completed and signed contract in the briefcase?
No one.
Mm-hmm. Good. Now we have the threat notes, the contract, the afternoon newspaper, the briefcase, the fedora hat, the gun, no ejector shells, the horoscope, the cigarette, and the two chairs. One with a small hole in it.
Come in.
Ah, Inspector Kramer at last. What have you?
Well, we covered every inch of that place and didn't find a single empty shell. There were two bullets in the body and the one that passed through him into the chair back in Paula Kenyon's place. They were all three fired from Doris Murray's little automatic.
Any fingerprints on the gun?
None but Doris Murray's.
Not unexpected, to say the least.
The bullet that was lodged in the chair in Paula's place went through his heart. Now, he was apparently shot in her room, but...
But how did he get into Doris Murray's place? I'll be able to explain that when we locate those three empty shells, Inspector. Bring our guests in, Archie.
Come in, please. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Nero Wolfe. Miss Paula Kenyon.
Hello.
Miss Doris Murray.
Hello, Mr.
Rick Hunter, the director.
How do you do?
David Banning, the playwright.
How do you do?
Won't you be seated, please? May I present Inspector Kramer of Homicide?
How do you do, Inspector?
Yeah. Mr. Wolfe has asked you here to give such details as you recall, which might be of assistance to him in the solution of the murder of Emil Stoner.
Mr. Hunter, as the director, whom did you favor as the star of your next production?
Why, Doris Murray.
You have been deeply interested in Miss Murray?
Hasn't done me much good.
But you do love her?
I do.
And you are deeply interested in the progress of her career?
I am, most assuredly.
Did you know that Mr. Stoner had made out and signed a contract for a certain woman to play the lead in the new show?
No.
You knew that Doris Murray had a gun in her dressing room?
Yes.
You were in the hotel cocktail lounge all afternoon until you met Doris and Mr. Goodwin.
Yes.
And you could have seen Emil Stoner into the lobby and go to the elevator.
I could.
Could you prove that you never left the cocktail lounge until you met Doris and Archie?
Maybe not.
Did you see Mr. Stoner go into the elevator?
I did.
Mr. Banning, you wrote the new play. Were you in favor of Miss Murray playing the part?
Why, no. I felt Paula Kenyon was better suited for it.
You and Mrs. Kenyon are engaged to be married?
Yes.
Anything happened to Mr. Stoner, you as next in line could assign the role as you saw fit.
That's correct.
Did you know that Mr. Stoner had made a final decision on the part?
I did not.
He didn't tell you anything about it at lunch today?
No, I made a strong plea for Paula.
You know about the gun in Miss Murray's dressing room?
Everyone did, apparently.
Very well. Miss Kenyon, did Emil Stoner visit your apartment often?
Not often. We were not on too friendly terms.
Did you phone him to visit you this afternoon?
No, who said I did?
No one? I merely asked. Were you, by any chance, still in love with Emil Stoner?
Now, see here, I don't appreciate that kind
of
talk.
Just relax, Mr. Banning.
I was not in love with Mr. Stoner. That was over.
You and Doris Murray were one time very friendly.
Yes, till I found out how two-faced she was. Emil was a fool to fall for her, but you couldn't tell him anything. All she's interested in is a career.
You're not interested in your career, Miss Kenyon.
Well, yes, in a way.
You wanted the star part. You phoned Stoner this morning.
Yes, but he said he was going to give it to her.
You knew about Doris's gun?
No, I...
You recognized it immediately, boss.
Well, yes, I knew. What if I did?
Then you wrote these threatening notes to Miss Murray.
I did not. I did not.
You didn't know the contract had already been signed?
No.
And you still had a motive to kill him?
I wrote those notes. She had nothing to do with it. You can check them on my typewriter.
We know, Mr. Banning. We've already done that.
I know how it looks, but Paula didn't do it. I knew he was coming to her place. I called him. I knew Paula was out. I did it.
If so, what did you do with the ejected shells?
I threw them away.
How many?
Three.
Oh, no, David, please don't.
I don't believe you, Mr. Banning. Miss Murray, did you know the contract had been made out and signed?
No.
You're lying, Miss Murray. You said you didn't see Stoner this afternoon.
I didn't.
You called him and asked him to visit you. You did get the threat notes and they frightened you. But you didn't know they would frighten Stoner.
I did not phone him, nor did I see him.
Yes, you did. His briefcase was on the piano. And he was there in the late afternoon because he brought with him a 4 o'clock edition of the Herald Tribune.
What if he was there? I didn't kill him.
He told you then about his decision. He left Faraday, forgot the briefcase, and went to Paula's apartment to wait for her.
That's not true. That's not true.
Filled with rage, you got your gun, which you said had disappeared from your dressing room. Then calmly put it into your bag, walked across the hall, and shot him as he sat reading a horoscope.
No, no, no!
Archie, a handbag. Thank you. Notice. I run my finger through a hole in the corner. She fired through the bag. And see, three empty shells.
No!
And here's a contract made out to Paula Kenyon. Too bad, Miss Murray.
Well, that's a good day's work, boss.
Come here, Archie.
Right. Say, tell me, how did Stoner, if he was shot in Paula's room, get back to Doris's room? She couldn't carry him.
Oh, now, Archie, that's not too difficult. He walked.
Shot through the heart? Impossible.
That's a fallacy, Archie. Official medical records show that people have walked a block in such instances.
No wonder Doris was so shocked when she saw him back in her room.
The shooting took place after she called us, and it seemed unbelievable that anyone would leave the gun and not the ejected shells. Although the gun must have been concealed when fired.
Yeah. Paula would have no reason to do that, because she was in her own apartment.
And these men are not the type who would have fired through their coats.
And Doris, before she started down the hall, would naturally conceal the gun, huh?
In her handbag. Where else?
Boss. Midnight. It's another day. I'm a year older.
Yes. Cuthbert's correspondence detective course in 4 easy lessons. Happy birthday, Archie.
You have been listening to The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, starring Sidney Greenstreet. Tonight's transcribed story was based on the characters created by Rex Stout. This is an Edwin Fadiman program, produced and directed by J. Donald Wilson. In the cast were Gerald Moore as Archie Goodwin, and Gene Bates, Betty Lou Gerson, Bill Johnstone, Peter Leeds, and Vic Perrin. Next week at this same time, Nero Wolfe and Archie will bring you The Case of the Party for Death. Don Stanley speaking.
There you have it. That's The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe from February 2nd, 1951. The Case of the Vanishing Shells, starring Sidney Greenstreet. Also in that cast, you heard Gerald Moore. Now, Gerald Moore played Philip Marlowe on the radio. He played Archie Goodwin in this episode. Also, Gene Bates, Peter Leeds, Vic Perrin. Terrific cast. William Johnstone, who played The Shadow for a few years on the radio. That's a good detective adventure. And when we come back here later tonight, Lisa Wolfe, you're going to go home, probably take a little nap.
A
right?
long nap.
Probably
thank
a
you.
Long nap and a bath, right?
No, probably no? not.
A nap and a bath.
I don't usually, shower, bathe. I just like, right. to be very natural.
Well, it's not Thursday.
Right. It's not December yet.
Thursday.
I'll wait till December.
And then we'll be back here at 11, and we have 3 more detective adventures for you, including Candy Matson. She was a female detective, and she was tough. Don't mess with Candy Matson. And then yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and then Boston Blackie. So this whole weekend, Detective Adventures.
Yeah, it seems like the listeners were very happy with my choices this week.
And we have pictures of all of these actors on our Facebook page. So if you go to Facebook and search WGN Radio Theater, you'll see pictures of all of the actors we had on the air tonight. You know, Howard Duff, Sidney Greenstreet, and Jack Webb. And then tomorrow night, or actually tonight, you'll see what Natalie Masters looks like, as she starred as Candy Matson, Bob Bailey, who was Johnny Dollar, and then Dick Calmar, who played Boston Blackie. So check out our Facebook
page. And most importantly, there's a picture of Elif with pink hair.
Oh, there is?
So you might want to check that out.
Oh, yeah, that's a great picture.
She might
I
be
like
standing
that.
With me with pink hair. Very as well. Cool.
And make sure you like us when you go there, too.
Of course
we
like you.
We want to be liked.
I like you.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, it's more of the WGN Radio Theater. When we come back, as I say, at 11 o'clock tonight, we have more Detective Adventures. You won't want to miss that. And you also won't want to miss Dave Plyer's show because he's up next. Right, Dave? Oh, wait a second. Hang on. What microphone is this?
This is three.
Okay, there we go. How's that?
Can you hear me now?
So you know what? It was the opposite way. I was going the opposite way.
Carl, you're usually a little bit opposite. It's okay.
Yeah, this is the new studio for me and Lisa.
You know, I started here. So when I started doing shows up here 5 years ago, there was no engineer on duty. That was one of the, you know, old management said, that's the way we're going to cut costs. So let's put a new producer and a new host in the studio.
And see what happens.
Yeah, and just let
now,
you figure it
that's
out.
That's amusement, right?
Well, I entertainment. Think part of it was because the whole operation is just down the hallway.
Right.
That we could go push something if we needed to, even though I had no idea what that room was all about. But
wow.
But I tape stuff in here every week. You know, there's always a pre-taped interview that I have because not everyone wants to get up with me at 2 in the morning. But
yeah.
But I also... I'm a little more casual. I might swear a little bit. So hopefully I realize we're live in here for once. Hey, the guy that played Nero Wolf, is that the same guy from...
Casper Gutman.
But was he in Christmas in Connecticut? Was he the old...
No. I don't believe he was in Christmas in Connecticut.
Such a...
We have to break? Oh, Elif's saying we have to break.
What?
Yeah.
We have more spots?
We have another spot.
Okay,
I will be right back with David Plyer.
All right, sounds good.
Dave Plyer, he has the largest Rolodex of any of the of the talents here on WGN. Because I tell you, you have always
it's
wonderful
fun.
Guests.
Oh, I'm a big
fantastic
dork, so
guest.
I like bringing these folks to you. So we broke for me, so I think we just told me what was on the show. But you know what we're going to do, too? I've got my own thoughts on... the post-election, and I'm tired of hearing about it. I must tell you that I've had to decompress for the last couple of days and just shut everything off. I can't listen to anything anymore. It's just become a glut for me. So I've got a few things I want to share about that. But then Thomas Dolby, She Blinded Me with Science.
Love it.
So he invented the cell phone ringtone. That's what he's like now known for. Like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Really?
That's him.
Oh, my gosh.
So...
Did he buy an island somewhere because he gets a royalty every time we call someone?
Seriously.
You get a half a penny.
He after the music biz for him for like 15 years, he went to Silicon Valley, got a startup going, and created the cell phone ringtone. So really fascinating.
Oh, my gosh.
Like that's not unexpected.
That's like one of the monkeys invented Post-it notes, right, or something like that?
Yeah, it was his mother.
Was it the whiteout stuff?
Yeah, but it was
something.
The mother.
Right.
Nesmith.
Mickey Dolenz?
Mike Nesmith.
Nesmith's mother.
Yeah. Mike Nesmith's mother. He's got lots of cash. That's why he tours occasionally.
Yeah.
You know, because he doesn't have to. We're also going to preview the Magnificent Lights Festival that happens next Saturday. And I've got a psychologist coming in from the Chicago School of Psychology.
Lisa, perfect. There you go.
Yes.
Stick around. Would you, Lisa?
Wolf.
Stay
Dr.
here.
Dr. Wolf will be here.
Dr. Wolf. There you go.
But you know what? What I keep hearing about and reading about is that holidays can be very difficult for a lot of families. People are infighting and split up or whatever it might be. So I thought it'd be a great time to come and talk about how to cope with some of those situations, maybe forgive and forget a few things, or at least let's see what we can do to help cope with the stress of the holidays.
That's a great idea because the holidays is not always joyous for everyone.
No.
I mean, they can be very stressful.
No, so we're going to have someone in live, and she's still take some calls.
Very, very good. Stick around for Dave Plyer because he's up next, and we'll be back here at 11 o'clock, so make sure you're with us.